Once we finish the first of all, good morning. It is a pleasure to be learning with my esteemed Talmidim as we start a very brand new concept of learning and Abud Yomi. We're going to be doing Masechet Makot, and our goal is to finish this by the end of the year and make a grand siyum together. Makot starts off, we'll do the first Mishnah and the opening Gemara on Daf Bet Amud Aleph. The Mishnah talks about the concept of Edom Zomim. Edom Zomim are two witnesses who have... who conspired against someone else to bear testimony and are saying something that is false. Strikingly enough, the opening Mishnah does not talk about define that, although Rabbi Ari Smith just helped us define that, but the opening Mishnah talks about particular aspects of how you apply it. And they're initially supposed to get the same punishment. Whatever they intended to do to someone else will happen to them. So the Mishnah starts off about situations when it is a little more complex. So take a look at the Mishnah, which we have in front of us. How can the Edom become Zomimin? Not how do the process works, because that's going to be discussed later in on the Perek. Not what happens in a normal circumstance, where they merely get whatever penalty they wanted to do to someone else, but very unique circumstances that are somewhat strange. So the Mishnah says as follows: Me'idanu be'ish ploni, shehu ben grusha or ben chalutza. We have a situation where two people testify about an individual who is a Kohen, and they testify that he is a Kohen of dubious lineage. Dubious meaning? Questionable. David Ben Torah's lineage is pristine. It is perfect. So here they say that he is the son of a woman who is divorced or a woman who was part of the chalitza process, both individuals who cannot marry a Kohen. So if their testimony would be true, that would render him a invalid Kohen. It would make his Kohen status...
Not a good look.
Yes, from David Ben Torah, a man who knows a Kohen status when he sees it. So it would not be a good look. So what are we going to do to that individual? How can we do that? First of all, the people being Edim may not be Kohanim. Second of all, even if they are Kohanim, but they're not really Ben Grusha, Ben Chalutza, we can't give them this status. What do we do to them? So says the Mishnah, Ein Omrim Yasezeh Ben Grusha, Ben Chalutza Tachtav. You can't say that, okay, you two Edim, you wanted to make this person an invalid Kohen, we're going to make you an invalid Kohen. But I'm not really an invalid Kohen. Rav Noam Wolfson is not even a Kohen at all. So we don't do that, says the Mishnah. Ella loka arbayim, but rather we give them malkos. We give them makos, which is lashes. It says the lashes 40. We don't actually give them 40. We actually give them 39. And we'll talk about why it calls the language of 40, but it's really not. It's really only 39. But that's what happens in its place. Mm-hmm. Then it goes on. Even none of each ploni shuchai of liglos. We testify about a certain individual. He's supposed to be sent into golos. Galut, what is galut? Exile. Why would he be sent into exile? Because perhaps he killed someone improperly. He killed someone bishogig that would be deserving of going into galus. Again, ain omrim yigal is a takta. We don't say that we send that same person into exile, even though that's what he was trying to do to this other individual, but rather, elaloka arbaim, but rather again, he gets makos, the 40 makos, which again, 40 being 39, rounding up, that is the language of the Torah. That's why we use say 40, and actually we'll discover later on in the parak that we don't actually give everyone 39 lashes. 39 lashes is pretty harsh. Anyone know what we do? What do we do with this individual? Ever learn this?
Until they can't take anymore.
Ah! So Menachem says you give it so you can't take anymore. So you are almost 100% correct. You are 99% correct. What we do is the doctor goes and investigates and says, okay, is he one of the individuals who can handle it? Is he a gibor? Is he in our parlance, a starker? Or... Oh, schwach guy, a little wimpy, you can't take so many. So we always go in groups of three, we'll see why, and the doctors make their best estimation. Now, let's say they make their estimation and they realize he's dying there. He doesn't need to go any further. We said he could take 24. After 9, he's like, he's done. So we'll discuss that, and the rule is that we don't say, well, we said 24. I'm sorry, maybe I'll kill him, but, you know, we said 24. It doesn't work that way, and we'll have to figure out accordingly. Now, what's very striking about this Mishnah, the Mishnah starts off with the language is, how do Edom become Zomim? And what do we do? The Mishnah describes the exceptions to the rule. None of these are the normal rule. The normal rule is, I testified falsely, theoretically, of course, and I wanted to make Morty Myers lose $100. So that's a lie. Morty's an honest man. He never stole $100 from a soul. He'd never do that. Yes, tips are deserving. So what would happen to me? I'd have to pay $100. That's midah keneged midah. That's exactly what I wanted to do. Happens to me. That's a normalated element. And what do we do in our Mishnah? We start off with the exceptions to the rule. So the Gemara is bothered by that very question. Look at the Gemara. Ha-ketzad eina edim nasa zelman mi-boile. The Gemara says, you should have started off with, how do you not do the rule? This is the opening Mishnah in Makot. This is the first time we're introducing the concept. And we introduce the concept with the exceptions. That's a little strange. We should introduce the concept with a normal case. So that's what bothers the Gemara. Ha-ketzat eina edim nasa zemun mibarli. You should have worded the Mishnah differently. You should have worded the Mishnah, how do we not do the regular rule? Moreover, v'od, good word to use. You want to impress people. Moreover, it's a good word. V'od, midiktoni lekaman. Later on, we're going to learn. Aval amru lehem heich atami edim. The Gemara says, we do know, there is a Mishnah that actually tells us how you become an Eid Zomem. And the Mishnah says, how to become an Eid Zomem? By the way, how do I know someone is lying? If I testify about Morty Myers, that he stole $100 from Noah Wolfson, that's my testimony. Now, I'm lying. How can Morty prove I'm lying? So the Mishnah says, you know how we prove he's lying? I claim this happened on a Sunday at 2 o'clock in the afternoon. 2 o'clock in the afternoon, I said I saw Morty Myers go into Noah's house and steal that money. And then two other Edim, Reb Zeke Ratner and Reb Aiden Weil, come and say, Rabbi Blau, with all due respect, we know you are usually an honorable man, but that couldn't be possible, because that Sunday at 2 afternoon, you were with us in the J playing ball. There's no way you saw Morty Myers do anything, right? So then I am an Eid Zomem. Why? Because it couldn't be true. It couldn't be true, because I wasn't there. So that's what the Mishnah says. So the Gemara is bothered. We have a Mishnah that explicitly describes how to become an Eid Zomem. Why isn't that our Mishnah? Two questions. Again, number one, our Mishnah is dealing with the exceptions instead of the norm. Number two, there is a Mishnah that talks about how you become Eid Zomem, and that's not our Mishnah. So the Gemara says, you're right. So the reason our Mishnah starts with this abnormal case, says the Gemara, a few lines in, Tana Hatam Koi. The Mishnah is actually... our Mishnah is playing off the Masechta that preceded it. If you look at your Seder, you look at your order of Gemara, so the Mishnah, the Masechta that is directly before Makos is Sanhedrin. And at the end of Sanhedrin, the Mishnah says the following. Kol hazomimin makdimin la'ota misa, chutz mizome bat koinu bo'olosh ein makdimin la'ota mita ela lamita acheres. The last, that's dealing with something totally different. Sanhedrin is dealing with the question of capital punishment. Capital punishment means... when someone gets killed for doing an offense. And the Mishnah talks about a circumstance where a person, if Edom Zomim testify about a Bas Kohen, a daughter of a Kohen, and the person who is with her, so they've created some type of affair, they've done an illegal relationship that's deserving of death, but they have different mito because of their different status, a little more involved, we don't have to go into it right now. So the Mishnah there says, look, usually you should get the same mito that you wanted to impose about someone else, but in this one you can't. So you have to get something different. That's the discussion in Sanhedrin. The end of Sanhedrin is talking about a unique Edom Zomimin case. Our Mishnah plays off of that. See what's going on? Our Mishnah is really a hemshek. It's a continuation of the Mishnah of the last Masechta that preceded it. V'yesh Edom Zomim Acherim she'ein osin behen din hazama kol ikar ela malkot arbaim. So our Mishnah says, oh, we're learning malkot. It's a new thing for us. But when the Gemara is being set up, the Gemara is playing off of the last Masechta. Well, the last Masechta ended with the discussion of people not getting the right punishment of death. So we say, you know what? I'll tell you something else where they don't get the right punishment either. Instead, they get lashes. And that's our Mishnah. So our Mishnah is a segue from the last Masechta. So, and on its face, it doesn't make sense. But if you look at it in context, it makes perfect sense. And the Mishnah explains, Ketze me'idon obeish polishu ben grusha ben chalutza, so the Gemara says, our Mishnah, that's just repeating our Mishnah, and our Mishnah plays off the Mishnah that ended Sanhedrin, just like in that situation. The liars, the scoundrels who wanted to testify falsely, can't get the same mitzvah they wanted to impose, but they get something else. In a similar vein, our Mishnah as well, you're not going to get the exact same punishment that you wanted to do someone else, but you're going to get our lashes, depending on, of course, your strength. So now the Gemara says, Menani Mili, how do you know that? How do we know this rule of Mishnah? Who told us? The Pasuk only told us that whatever I wanted to do to Morty Myers, our innocent victim, comes back and rebounds to me. How does it ever say that, okay, I wanted to do X. I can't do X. Can't do X. I guess you get lashes. How do I know that? How do I know that's true? Amri B'Shua ben Levi, D'Amar Kra, the Pasuk says, Va'asitem lo kasher zamam. The Pasuk says, you do to him being the false witness, as he lied, as he wanted to do to the other person. Now, if I'm a Kohen, yes, Reb Aiden Wild.
What do you mean you do what you want
to do? Whatever when I've lied, and I've lied in whatever way I've lied, and that was going to impose a penalty on you, Ravade and Wild. You were innocent as snow. You're pure. You didn't do anything wrong. But my lying would have made you get a certain punishment. So the halach is, you know what we do? Whatever I lied about you, it boomerangs and it happens to me. Yes.
I thought that Mia Kegamita was more of a concept of like God imposing that.
That is usually a God imposed concept. Here we're modeling that. In other words, to be a sufficient deterrent to make sure people don't lie about other individuals. You know what happens when you lie about someone? Be very careful, because whatever lie you wanted to tell about, that's going to happen to someone else, is now going to be your own punishment. Now it's interesting. The actual wording of the pasuk was, "We do to him." In the case of a Kohen, go back to David Ben-Tor, case of a Kohen, so a Kohen has a certain lineage. If I ruin their lineage, if I say a lie, and I say David's not a legit Kohen, what then happens? His children are now also not legit Kohanim, right? You know, it's not just a lie about him. It has weird, very far-ranging ramifications. Says the Pasuk as follows, I wanted a lie about Reb David Ben-Tor. If you're going to make me invalid, it's not going to just be me who's invalid. It's also going to be my children. But that's not how my children did nothing. They happen not to be Kohanim in this case. But theoretically, they're nice, legitimate, honest, God-fearing Kohanim. And because of my lie, we're going to make them also invalid. So the Gemara says, again, Amar Krav Asitim Lo Kasher Zamam. You do to him the false witness. Lo Balola Zarob. You can only punish him. You can't punish his children. That wouldn't be fair. Rebaden, one more moment. Mm-hmm. You're anxiously willing to ask a beautiful, brilliant question. So the Gemara says, V'lifsul didei v'lo lifsul zareh. You're right. It's not fair to punish my children. But what did I want to do? Punish. Okay, so just make me puzzle and have my children still be valid Kohanim, right? Okay, that would be fair. So the Gemara says, Kasher zamam laso svileka. But then it's not, I'm not getting the same punishment I wanted to do to David. Because if my lie would have been accepted, what would have happened to Reb David Ben-Tor? He would have been an invalid Kohen and his kids. If you're just going to make me invalid, I'm not getting, it's not the same punishment. Zeke and then Aiden, yeah.
Can they earn the validity back after?
So excellent question to Zeke. In this particular circumstance, the validity is not that he did anything wrong of his own. It would be a lie claiming that his father married a person he wasn't allowed to marry, and then he was automatically puzzled. You're right. If it had to do with a behavior, maybe it could be corrected. But this is like a lineage thing. If the Cohen's mother was the wrong person, it's just automatic. So the Gemara says, we're stuck, right? We don't have an answer. We can't punish the liar's children because that wasn't what the Torah said. But to make only him punished, that wasn't what I tried to do. So that's not really equal. So we don't know what to do. So what we do, might as well just give you makot. Makot is a nice catch-all lashes. Reb Aiden has a question. Reb Garvey has a question. We're almost done with the Amud. Excellent learning, gentlemen.
Do you still get 40 lashes if, like, let's say you lie, about like a really big lie versus like a small lie?
So that's an excellent question. We'll have to see as we go through them a second. When do the lashes come? For what type of things you get lashes? Is it a question of magnitude or volume? We'll have to see. Reb Gavri.
Why isn't it like you get punished for what you were going to do to David, and then instead of your kids getting punished, you get lashes for that?
Why don't we give both?
Yeah, so but a lesser amount of lashes.
we'll get a bonus package. You get a little punishment, and we'll throw in a couple of lashes, right?
Then you still get...
you get your punishment, right. So again, but once we're not fulfilling the pasuk exactly, so then really all bets are off. The pasuk said, I should get exactly what I wanted to do to him, but I'm not. I can't, because what I wanted to do to him, we can't do to me. So once that is off, so you're right, we could have like mixed and matched, but once it's off, so we're not doing what the pasuk says anyway. Let's finish up the Amud. Excellent learning, guys, in our inaugural first Bekiut Shir in Fuk Mizrahi history, sort of. At least on Sunday mornings. So the Gemara says as follows, Bar Pada Amar Kalva Chomer. He says, no, the reason I derive this is from a Kalva Chomer, an a priori argument. Umaha machalel, einu mischalel, habala chalev, alochilel, einu dinchloy is chalel. So those are a lot of words that need a little bit of understanding. So those words says as follows. Hamachalel, chilul is a kohen, means this person who, a chalal, is someone who is a kohen of this interesting lineage. So the halacha is, If a Kohen marries the person he's not allowed to marry, there are restrictions to what Kohen's allowed to marry. A Kohen's not allowed to marry, for example, a divorcee. Kohen's restricted from doing that. If a Kohen marries a woman who's a divorcee, one second, what happens to him? So the truth is, nothing happens to him. Rabbi Nachman is correct. His kids are impacted, but he's not impacted. It says the Gemara, a kal v'chomer. Look, Hamachalel, the one who creates the problem, which is the Kohen who behaved improperly, Enu mitchalel, he does not become a chalel himself. He does not become, his status didn't change. Habalechalel, the one who wanted to do it. Who wanted to do it? I, the lying witness, wanted to make the Kohen invalid. Was I successful? I was not. Velo, of course, I can't become a chalel. If I'm actually doing something inappropriate as a Kohen, and I'm creating, and I'm doing an Isur that's going to make my children a chalel after me, doesn't happen to me. So when I try to do it, and I wasn't even successful, I was caught in my lie. Of course I shouldn't become a chalel myself. Rabbi Eden had a question, and then Rabbi Nachum, you have a question still? No, I thought you had a question. No, Rabbi David had a question. You have a question? No.
Rabbi Nachum? It's not even a question, because since the Kohen himself wouldn't be affected, nothing should happen to the person who's
playing. No, so a Kohen's not affected in a case where he marries the wrong person. In our story, father. I was lying and saying that his father did something wrong. Fine. So that's what the Gemara says. It should be a kal v'chomer, right?
What happens to his kids then?
If the Kohen really marries the wrong person, so his children are no longer valid Kohanim. He has done that. So the Gemara says, so that was Bar Pedo's exception. Maskele Ravina im Kain. If you do the last line of the Amud, we're going to do a little more just to the top for completeness. Maskele Ravina im Kain, Batalta Toris Edim Zomimim. So the Gemara says, that's not a good question. What is the essence of Edim Zomimim? In the essence of Edim Zomimim, go back to my story with Morty Myers, my honest man. I was lying about Morty, right? What happens? Morty didn't actually wind up having to pay Noah anything. The essence of Edom Zomim is, if I get caught, I get nailed, right? Because two witnesses come. Aiden and Z came and said, Rabbi Blau, 2:00 in the afternoon, you were hooping it up in the J. You did not see that. There was no way you saw what you described. So Morty never actually took any money out of his pocket. I am punished for what I wanted to do, not what I did. What I wanted to do. So if that's the essence of Edom Zomim, this whole kal v'chomer falls by the wayside. Of course, it's not comparable to other situations. The whole point of Edom Zomim is you're punishing you for what you tried to do, not what you actually did. Let me just finish one more line. And let's do the top of Bedem et Bet, just two more lines to finish. Uma sokol einu niskal, habal iskol velosakal einu dinshlo yiskal. He says, in a situation where the Edom lied about someone, and they lied a really terrible lie, and the person got killed. Skila is, you know what skila is?
Stoning.
That's really awful. So the rule is, if they were successful, it's a gzeres hakasa. We only punish you for your intent, not for what you actually carried out. We'll have to discuss that later. So, based on that logic, if I tried to do it, of course I shouldn't be punished. But no, that's the essence of Edom Zomim. The essence of Edom Zomim is I'm always punished for what I try to do. So the Gemara says, "El machaverta kadashina miikara," must be like we initially learned. Their logic is the logic we described. If you cannot give him the exact punishment, it's not going to fit. So then we fall back on our catch-all punishment. Don't know what to do? Just give him some lashes. Reb David, do you have a question?
Yeah, as soon as they answer it.
Okay. Gentlemen, excellent job. We will see you all next week.